Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of Steven the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I've got a special guest. Joe Schilling emerged on the scene last year with his win over what would in Thailand be called Go Glaganorsen, and the rest of the world, Ko Glaganorsen. Go ahead and say hi to everybody, Joe.
How you doing?
Cool. Well, Joe, we will go ahead and jump into the first thing. Before we even talk about the fight, what got you into the Muay Thai sport? I mean, we've got a little bit of a rundown. I'll ask you about the Inside the Fight documentary a little bit later. But first, from your perspective, tell us where you're from. Tell us how, you know, tell us about your background and tell us what got you into Muay Thai.
I grew up in Dayton, Ohio. And when I was I'm the youngest of three children, I had an older brother. And, you know, growing up, we always used to fight and, each other and anybody in the neighborhood all the time. And, you know, I got a lot of trouble growing up. And my mom, when I was 15, said I had to find a hobby. She kind of sent me off to this kind of outdoor rehab sort of center thing. And when I came back, I had to have a hobby or she was going to send me to a boarding school. And the only thing I could think of was I wanted to fight. And she took me to a martial arts gym one day after school. And you know, I was pretty much grounded. I had been kicked out of four schools, and I was pretty much grounded from everything but my room. So, sent me to the gym. You know, I really looked up to the instructor. I really wanted to be like him. I started going to a Muay Thai, and I was grounded from everything but the gym. So it was hang out in your room all day, or after school, or hang out at the gym. So I just started doing that when I was 15. I had my first fight when I was 16, and you know, it was in Dayton, Ohio. There wasn't a lot of fights there, especially Muay Thai fights, so you know, we had to go to you know, Chicago one weekend, or Kentucky, or all the surrounding areas when we were fighting. You know, Muay Thai rules, kickboxing rules, I did some Sand Shao fights, I did some amateur boxing fights, and when I was 19 or 20, I moved from Ohio to Los Angeles. There just wasn't a lot of opportunity for me to do much but stay, but you know, get in trouble in Ohio. And I saw there was a Muay Thai magazine that had come out, and it was showing all these guys fighting all the time and doing all these great things in California for Muay Thai. And it was the only thing I was really naturally really good at. And decided that's what I was going to do. So, you know, I borrowed, my mom gave me like $300 in gas cards and packed my car up and I made it to like Texas. And I hit up a friend that was living out here in California that I had met from the gym. He had moved out a couple years before that, and borrowed some money from him. When I got here, I started going to school for personal training. When I graduated from personal training school, you know, I got a job at the YMCA, and I was personal training people for money and training, you know, Muay Thai at the old LA Boxing Club. It's not the LA Boxing franchise that's really big now. It was like this very old, low-income boxing gym in downtown Los Angeles where just so many fighters trained out of there. It was very rocky. When I first walked in there the first day, it was very much like a Rocky scene. It was like one room, pretty good sized room with two boxing rings, and there must have been like 60 trainers and fighters in there, and it was just real. I think I was the only white guy when I walked in, and it was a very intimidating scene or whatever. And then next door they had another ring, and there was more kickboxers, and I think overall the boxers thought that was like the sissy room or whatnot, but that's what I was there for. So and I met my trainer Mark Camoro, and we started working together. That was it's 8 years ago now. So been together 8 years, and I own my own gym with Mark. We're partners, and this is what I'm doing.
Awesome story. So tell me a little bit about your fight career once you got out to California. We're talking about before Gold Guy. Just talk a little bit. You don't have to name numbers, but just talk about, you know, your career. What was, you know, receiving purses like? Because sometimes, I'm a trainer now, and to some of my students, when they ask me how much I get paid in pro, and I was like, man, my first pro fight, I got $80. So what was it like for you in L.A. as far as, you know, financial opportunities or whatever, and just explain just being pro out in Los Angeles.
Well, when I moved out here, I was I had a completely different perception of California. I thought it was all chicks and surfers and Muay Thai was this huge sport where I was going to make all kinds of money and this was going to be my future. And when I got out here, I realized that it's not exactly just like that. And I was an amateur then at the time, and I think within the first year I was out there, I was fighting smokers. And I think I had smokers or amateur fights. They have at gyms. Actually, they have, I don't know, I think they call them smokers back east. But,
smokers and inner squads are what I know of, Mass. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, when we were doing those, almost, when I first moved out here, it was a hotbed for that. There were so many gyms, in Los Angeles or in Southern California that you could get smokers almost every weekend and, sometimes twice per weekend. And I had I had 16 of them, I think, within 4 months. And, and I just kept running through everybody, and I was working with Mark, and I was real raw. The gym I came from in Ohio was there wasn't a whole lot of us in the class in that camp, and our instructors weren't real. I think they had boxing backgrounds and kung fu background and a little bit of kickboxing, and they kind of just read the textbook, what I mean? And every day they would teach us, and basically we learned by beating the hell out of each other. So I got really tough when I was in Ohio, but that was pretty much all I was, just real, real tough and real aggressive. I didn't have much technique. And, when I moved to California, I was fighting smokers every weekend. But, after I went 23-1 as an amateur, and we were trying to get on, sanctioned cards. There was only one promoter at the time. And, we hit him up all the time and let's get Joe a fight. Can Joe fight? He finally called us up on 10 days notice and said, we got to fight for Joe. And we were all excited. And he's but he has to go pro. And it's going to be at 186 pounds. And I was walking around at about 175 at that time. And looked at my trainer and I was like, what do you think, I'm ready to go pro? And he's like, yeah, it's same shit, whatever. now you get the elbow. I was pretty excited about that. So we tried to get in the best shape we could in 10 days, and I made my pro debut. He had, I think he had 3 or 4 pro fights at that time, and just a whole bunch of amateurs. And, I won the fight. It was a split decision, but it was probably one of the best fights of my career. When I watched the video, it was the only time there, it went all 5 rounds, and it was a back and forth battle. I got dropped with a knee in the third round and still finished and won the fight. And it was great. But I took that on 10 days notice, and I think my pay was $500. And then my next fight right after that was $550, and then my next fight was $600. But it would take sometimes six months between fights, so it was hard to stay busy. And then I would take fights, any fight really, if they offered it to me, because I wanted to stay busy. And it's hard to be a professional fighter if you never fight. So I did some pro boxing fights to stay busy. And actually, my pro boxing debut, I fought a guy from the Wild Card, and which is a pretty famous gym, and I knocked him out in 5 seconds, which was set a U.S. record for the fastest knockout in pro boxing. And then I did some MMA as well to stay busy. I fought on Elite XC on Showtime twice. I did that World Combat League. So really, any fight that I could get, I would do to stay busy. And I never lost. I lost one Muay Thai fight, which was on short notice, but for the most part, there wasn't much money in it. And then I took a fight on 4 days' notice one time for about 2 years ago, and they told me the guy was 5'8", and was at 175 pounds, and I had been fighting at 168 at the time, and which is pretty much the weight class that I still would like to fight at now. It's just hard for me to get fights in that weight class. So, sorry, I'm kind of bouncing all over the place.
Nope, keep going. This is the stuff that people love.
Right now, and, it's been a long day. So, anyway, so I took this fight on 4 days' notice, and they told me, it's hard for you to get fights, and we'll keep you all busy here. The guy backed out. Please just give us, help us out here, and we'll make sure you stay busy, and this doesn't happen anymore. So I took the fight, and, they told me the guy's 175 pounds, he's Chinese, more of a kung fu guy, and you know, he's only 5'8", and I'm 6'3". So I'm thinking, all right, I'm not in the best shape right now. I'm not in good shape at all right now. And I'm pretty skinny right now. And but the guy's only 5'8", so I'll just go out there and, you know, knee him in the face, and it should be cool. And I have a huge height advantage. About 5 minutes before the fight, they tell me Chinese. The promoter was American, but he was doing a co-promotion with another Chinese promotion. And the Chinese promoter and the Chinese referee come into the dressing room 5 minutes before I walk out and tell me that there's no knees to the head whatsoever, that you're not allowed to clinch, and there's no elbows. And I'm like, oh, that's great. You just took away all of my weapons. And and by the way, it's Wang Fong Zhang rules or some shit like that. And I'm like, what the hell is that? Oh, it's like Muay Thai, which you get points if they sweep you. And I'm like, okay. Well, my trainer starts going ballistic. He's pissed. And he's like, you know, is he allowed to pick him up? He's allowed to throw him? He's allowed to do any of that stuff? And it's like, oh, no. It's just like Muay Thai. You catch the leg and you sweep the leg, he gets points for that. All right. Fight starts. He, like, double legs me right away. It's like judo throws. And he just keeps... He's got these massive legs on it. Oh, and while I'm getting in the ring, they're announcing his record. He's the captain of the Chinese San Chao team or something. He's 20-0. And I have, like, I think I had 4 pro Muay Thai fights and no pro Wing Fang rules or whatever it was. So I ended up getting my knee torn apart in that fight. I tore my MCL off the bone and my ACL in half, my left knee. And I had the cartilage of my right knee torn, and the liner underneath, knocked loose in my right knee, and the liner under my kneecap torn in my right knee as well. So I was out for a year, and over that year, you know, I really, you know, watching that fight all the time, I was pretty depressed for like the first 3 months. It was a real tough thing to go through, and then, you know, I really matured a lot, thought about, you know, nutrition and strength training and staying ready all the time. You know, you can't just train when you have a fight. You know, you need to be consistent. You have to take care of yourself. And I was eating, like, cheeseburgers and McDonald's every day and calling myself a professional athlete. And, you know, when I made my first fight back after a year, I fought Ryan Roy from Fairtex. Had a good reputation. He was one of John Sonnen's students. And we fought at 165, which was the weight I was more comfortable at. And I beat him. I think I knocked him out or by cut in the third or fourth round. And it was like the first fight back from my having that knee surgery. And we were real, real nervous because, you know, it was still kind of popping and I had scar tissue in there. And you don't really know. It's a very freaky feeling when your leg doesn't work the way it's supposed to. And, you know, I won that fight. And then from that fight, the fans loved it. I was really, really aggressive and really emotional about that fight. So it was a really exciting fight to watch. And, I gained some fans from that. And then the promotion brought me back. And I fought Chaz Mulkey right after that, about 3 months later. Well, that's not true. After I fought Ryan Roy, I went to Thailand. And I trained with Samat Payakarun, and I fought. I had the opportunity to fight at Rajadumnern Stadium, which was like a dream of mine. And I won that fight by a knockout in the fourth round by elbow. And then when I came back, I fought Chaz Mulkey, and Chaz again had a good reputation behind him. He's actually one of my close friends now. Mm-hmm. We had a really good fight, and I beat him by a knockout in the third round. And from there, we went to, I fought, you know, and every time my purse is increasing. I'm not going to get into how much money, but it was a lot more than when it started. But still far, far less than what MMA or boxers get. And then after that fight, basically I went on like a 6-fight winning streak, and 4 of the 6 fights were title fights. And then, you know, I won the WBC super middleweight title, national title, and then my next fight after that was for Lion Fight Promotions, and they offered me a fight with Brandon Banda for the 175 title, and I was really nervous about going back up to 175, because the last time I was at 75, I got my knee torn apart, and you know, I hired a strength and conditioning coach, and we got really, really serious, and I had, like, a really long, like, 9-week training camp, got really strong, and, you know, I knocked out Brandon in the first round, I think 2 minutes with a knee to the head, and, you know, I've been eating right and taking care of myself, and it's amazing how much your body will grow when you actually feed it and, like, you know, exercise properly and work out, as opposed to before, where I was just eating junk food and, you know, not really training consistently. So then I moved up to 175. I had the opportunity after I knocked out Brandon. I got an opportunity right away to fight Cal Kly, and which had been like a dream of mine for a long time. You know, I really looked up to Cal Kly. I remember actually when I first moved out to California, when I started going to that personal training school, and in my notebook, in my binder, inside the cover, I had a giant picture of Cal Kly landing that flying head kick on Mighty Mo.
Yeah.
And it was pretty cool to have the opportunity to fight him later on. And, you know, I'm always pretty vocal about my interviews, and when people ask me stuff, you know, I'm very honest about what I think. And a lot of people don't like that. So, which is probably what honestly gets me a lot of these opportunities, is there's a lot of hype, and a lot of people want to see me lose. A lot of people like my attitude, but because I talk so much in my interviews, a lot of people know who I am, and that is definitely helped me in growing in the Muay Thai scene. Again, it's not like I'm doing it on purpose. I'm just answering the questions they give me and being honest. And sometimes the things I say don't come out as respectful as probably somebody else would have said them. But it is honestly how I feel. And when I got the fight with Cal Kly, you know, there was all this internet hatred about how I had no business in the ring with Cal Kly, and how I was going to get raped in the clinch, and how, you know, all these things, American fighters suck. And, you know, the more I started hearing this American fighters are no good shit, it really, really, really irritates me, and it helps motivate me to train harder. And I really wanted to put on a good show and make a statement that, you know, I am going to beat Cal Kly, and I am capable of doing pretty much whatever the hell I want in the sport, as long as I'm willing to work hard for it. And when I fought Cal Kly, it was in my hometown, well, not my hometown, but where I live in Los Angeles. It was, you know, in downtown LA. My gym is in downtown LA. I had a lot of fans there, and the fight went my way. I knocked him out. I knocked him down in the first, like, 8 seconds of the fight, knocked him down again, like, 12 seconds later, and then finished him with the third knockdown. I think they were all straight right hands, actually. And it was good. And then I got the interim WBC world title, which was an awesome feeling to have, you know, a world title. But at the same time, it is very, it really bothers me, the interim moniker. And, you know, I just can't wait to unify the titles and get my shot at Art 11. And that's pretty much where we're at right now. And I'm waiting to get with Artem Levin, and I have a fight this weekend with Simon Marcus.
It's awesome, because I'm just looking at my list of questions I asked you, and you answered, like, most of them. One thing I want to talk about is I did want to focus on the Artem Levin fight. We're talking pound for pound, one of the best guys in the world. He'd be in the top five of my pound for pound list. Also, Steve Wakelin is a guy who is around your weight class, another person who I'd love to see you fight. Is there, you know, including these gentlemen, are there people out there who, you know, Joe Schilling really wants to test himself against, so that he can prove once for all he's the best in the world from 168 to 175?
Yes. It's funny, when I just signed, a lot of people are talking about this contract that I just signed with Lion Fight Promotions, and really it's they've really over-publicized it, really. I mean, to have a three-fight contract with a promotion isn't really that big a deal, but they, you know, they wanted to help build that, so now it's kind of a big deal. But it's not like I signed my life away. But when I did sign the contract, they asked me, you know, give us a list of opponents that you want. This is right after the Cal Kly fight. And originally, they were supposed to strip. When I fought Cal Kly, it was supposed to be at 168 pounds, not 175. They were supposed to strip Steve Wakelin, because he hasn't defended his title in, like, over a year. They were going to strip Steve Wakelin, and Cal Kly and I were going to fight for the actual super middleweight world title. And after I had already started training for that camp, or for that fight, I was about 3 weeks into the camp. The promotion, the promoter called me and said, oh, there's a problem. Calcli can't make 168, which is just ridiculous. I mean, he might not want to make 168, but he could easily make 168. I think he bought Tato for, in K1 Max for at like 154. He's not a very big guy.
Correct.
However, you know, he doesn't have to, and he's still Calcli at 175. You know, people are still going to come pay to watch him fight. He's still amazing and has done a lot at 175. So, I was upset. I was like, you know, well, what about the world title? What am I going to do now? You know, and they said, oh, we'll make it an interim title because Artem Levin is under contract with the MPL and he can't defend his title for over a year, and we'll make it an interim title, and if you beat Calcli, then we'll give you the opportunity to fight Artem Levin. And I'm like, okay, you just kind of forced me out of being a world champion at super middleweight and put me right in, you know, with Artem Levin at 175 at light heavyweight. And I was like, okay, so that's what happened. And then since then, after I beat Calcli, Lion Fight Promotions asked me, who do you want to fight? And I said, I want to fight Cosmo Alexander because he's ranked number one at super middleweight, right behind Steve Wakeling. I'm under the impression that they're going to strip Steve Wakeling. He hasn't fought really anybody in over a year since he got his title.
And only once in like the last 4 years. He took a 2-year break before he won the title in Thailand.
Exactly. I mean, I personally think Steve Wakeling is pretty irrelevant at this point. That's just my opinion of the guy. And I said I wanted Cosmo, I wanted Steve Wakeling, and I wanted Artem Levin. Well, they offered Cosmo the fight, and he said that he wanted to fight at like 147 or 154 or something. It kind of made excuses for why he didn't want to fight. And then they contacted Steve Wakeling, and to be honest, all three of these guys know who I am. They know that I want to fight them. I've mentioned their names in countless interviews, but not been super respectful, except for Cosmo. I've never said anything bad about Cosmo. But I haven't been super respectful about either one of them, you know, Wakeling or Artem Levin.
Do you think they're ducking you because you're from the USA?
I don't know that they're ducking me because I'm from the USA. I think they probably thought I was irrelevant because I was from the USA. And then since knocking out Calcli, I think they probably could make more money fighting easier opponents, to be quite honest. I think that Artem Levin went to a 5-round decision with Calcli, and I knocked him down three times in the first round, put him out in like less than 2.5 minutes. I think if I'm Artem Levin, I'm not super thrilled to go fight Joe Schilling when I can fight Roberto Coco. You know, these other chumps that they've been fighting. Nothing against Roberto Coco, but he lost to Calcli the month before I fought Calcli. And once I beat Calcli, now all of a sudden Calcli's garbage. Look, Calcli's garbage. How come Artem Levin is getting fed the opponent that Calcli just beat as his next opponent, you know what I mean, by the MPL? I just think that, you know, and on that note, Artur Kashchenko has went way up in weight to fight at light heavyweight now, and he just beat Roberto Coco. So if these guys are the top guys in the world, and they're so badass and awesome, how come they're all fighting the same tomato can? That's my question. But the promotion, Lion Fight, offered Steve Wakeling a fight with me, and so they'd fly him to the U.S. and, you know, whatever. And Steve Wakeling, I don't know what exactly he said, but I know the promotion referred to him as a super prima donna. And, you know, I got to have this and I got to have that. And they wanted like $20,000 or something for the fight. And it was like, okay, you're not scared of me, but you're just going to come up with a bunch of ridiculous reasons why you're not going to fight. Or fight anybody, really. You haven't fought anybody in over, you know, you fought one guy in 4 years and you're the world champion. It's kind of silly to me. As far as Artem Levin goes, I'm the interim champion at 175. This is just, now I'm getting fired up. I was half asleep, now I'm getting fired up.
I love it.
Yeah, this guy Artem Levin, man, he's the world champion. He's fighting chumps from the MPL, which the MPL is kind of a joke to me. You know, they had 4 shows and none of them had more than 500 people in them. And, you know, all these guys are fighting Roberto Coco, and Artem Levin's the world champion. I'm the interim world champion. Artem Levin recognizes that, and somebody's told him. He knows, you know, it's all over the website. Everybody knows about it. And I'm fighting Simon Marcus on February 25th, and he's fighting some other guy that's had like two fights in 4 years as well, 2 days after me, and he's defending the title to that guy and not me, and I'm the interim champion. That's like, for all like the fans that might not understand this, that's like Nick Diaz and Carlos Condit fighting for the interim championship because GSP is in has a knee surgery, and George St. Pierre decides, you know what, my knee doesn't hurt that bad. I'm going to come back and I'm going to defend my title to Josh Koscheck, even though that Carlos Condit's the champion. And it's just silly to me. It's a mockery of the WBC. It's really not Artem Levin's fault. I would take easy fights for more money if the WBC would let me get away with it.
Awesome stuff. Well, let's go ahead and talk about this weekend. One of the tweeted questions that someone sent me was from Evan Boris. He said that he feels that you're strong where Marcus is weak and vice versa. How do you feel looking at this fight? Do you think that there are certain areas where you have a distinct advantage, where he has an advantage, and then you want to, you know, close the gap, you want to make the fight more your fight? Or you don't have to give game plan, that's up to you. But what do you think about just Marcus as an opponent and what you're expecting from this weekend?
Well, I think that's the what he said is what a lot of people think. I don't necessarily agree that I'm weak where he's strong, but I can understand where he's coming from and what he's trying to say. It's pretty much the same thing that Simon Marcus is saying when he says I'm an incomplete fighter. Most people see the fight with Cowfly and see my weakness being the clinch, right? I think that's what everybody's getting at, right? Would you agree with me? Yeah. The thing is with that is I was smashing Cowfly in the clinch. And what a lot of people don't know is before the fight, we're all in the back having the rules meeting, and they're saying, you know, there's no downward elbows, you know, and which is, everybody knows that in the fights in the U.S., but there's all these Thai guys that obviously they're going to do downward elbows. And he said that, and I said, are you sure? And they're like, yeah, we're sure. And I'm like, no, not you guys, to the refs. Like, are you refs sure that Cowfly knows that there's no downward elbows? And they said it to him in Thai, and he kind of, like, shook his head. And I was like, are you sure? And they shook his head, yeah, I understand. I'm like, it's fine. We're going to throw downward elbows, but I'm going to throw them too. And I'm 6'3", so mine are going to be a lot more often than yours are. You're 5'10". And during the fight, Cowfly hits me with a downward elbow from the break right before we clinched, before we got stuck up in that clinch. And I made a huge mistake. When he hit me with the downward elbow, I turned my head to the referee and I said, downward elbow. When that happened, Cowfly and I ended up in a clinch and we ended up in like this stupid position. Now, the referee's wife is part of the promotion. Okay? So everybody knows. The referee's wife is part of the promotion. They're both Thai. The guys that are fighting is Thai. So when he ended up in that clinch, there was like a ridiculously long period where nothing was going on. You know, you can see it on my face. I'm like, I'm wrapped up. I have one leg up, and I'm waiting for the referee to break. But instead of breaking, the referee shakes us off the rope to the middle of the ring, and that's when he swept me away. It wasn't like Cowfly did anything spectacular to me in the clinch. You know? So the weakness that they're saying that they're seeing in my clinch game is really just silly. Up until that fight, most of my knockouts have come from the clinch with either knees or elbows. So, you know, I think Simon Marcus thinking that he has a distinct advantage of me over me in the clinch is just wrong. But I understand that's where he come from. The other side is Simon, where I'm good is the same places where Artem Levin's good. Artem Levin does not fight with a traditional Muay Thai style. He switches his stances. He uses good angles. He uses footwork. He's got good hands. And all of those aspects, Simon Marcus is terrible at. I think if you look at Simon Marcus' defense for punches, it's awful. If you look at his opponents that he's fought, they're awful. And I think Simon Marcus' overall footwork is really bad. I think Simon Marcus has gotten a lot of hype by fighting in the MPL, which we just talked about how the MPL gives Tomato Can's opponents. And the MPL matchmaker is Simon Marcus's best friend and training partner. So, of course, they're going to give him Tomato Can's as well. And, you know, I think his record is completely made up. I think it's phony. I think he's phony. I think his Jamaican accent, being that he was born and raised in Canada, is phony. And, you know, I'm just really looking forward to, you know, beating him and showing the world that, you know, he's not all that.
Well, let's look to the future here. After this fight, you know, what would you be thinking future-wise? Because clearly, you know, you're around 77 kgs, and it's Showtime has a 77 kg title. That road, of course, also leads to Artem Levin, but they've also got a lot of good fighters, you know, internationally who, you know, they could match you up with. Would you like the opportunity to fight out there? We talked about this a little bit on Facebook. It was a question that, you know, Vinny Showtime Sherman had brought up to me. He also mentioned the one about Steve Wakeling. But what are your thoughts on kickboxing, you know, abroad? Just because I ask this question more because I see that as where your heart is to stay in the stand-up game rather than the MMA game. I could be wrong there. I'm just kind of reading what you said on Inside the Fight. But what are your thoughts about possibly fighting in It's Showtime?
I would love the opportunity to fight with It's Showtime. You know, it was actually my dream for a long time to fight for K-1. And, you know, It's Showtime has kind of filled that gap for the K-1 scene. And, yeah, I would love the opportunity to fight for It's Showtime. And if the last guy that sent in that tweet message is correct, and that is my weakness, then the It's Showtime rules would be perfect for me, if I'm not mistaken.
Cool. Well, you know, to build on that, I'll go back to the Twitter machine and see what else we got here. You touched on this a little bit earlier. You said you didn't like the interim tag. So in your mind, does that mean that you don't think too highly of the title, or it's not really your title until you beat Artem Levin? What are your thoughts on just the interim title that you hold?
Actually, you hit the nail on the head. I don't think too highly of it. You know, it's something that I've dreamed of and I want to be proud of. And honestly, when I look at it, I see it's Artem Levin's title. I'm just getting to wear it around, and you know, it's hanging on my wall, but I'm not real proud of it. It doesn't really mean anything. It means I beat the same guy that Artem Levin beat, but I haven't beat Artem Levin. And you know, I'm just asking and pleading and begging and waiting patiently for Artem Levin to give me the chance and the opportunity to to fight for the world title and to be what I want to be, you know. And I think I've earned that right. And yeah, right now I don't see myself as the world champion. And it doesn't mean a whole lot to me, no.
Cool. Well, this is a two-part question, and it kind of goes to something else that you said, and something that I agree with. The Kieran asks, he's wondering what your views are in MMA since you've been helping MMA guys out with striking, you know, like how you've been helping out Nick Diaz and how you fought in MMA in the past. I think you, and I agree because I go crazy every time I see it, if I'm watching, you know, UFC, and I'm a guy who trains UFC fighters, I'm watching UFC, and all of a sudden, just because they're trying to fill a spot, they'll add Muay Thai fighter or Muay Thai training to somebody who couldn't throw a straight punch to save their lives. What goes through your head, or what is your views of just MMA in general? And, of course, working with Nick, you know, Nick's tough as hell, you know. So there are people who are just wondering if that changed your opinion about it, or I don't think you were ever against it. But, you know, if I'm just reading into what you say in your interviews, I don't think you were ever against it. But it seems like you were upset when you started to see that Muay Thai fighter is connected to some of these guys. What are your thoughts on MMA?
I don't particularly like MMA, the sport. I don't it's not my love. It's not my passion for it. However, as we were talking about the WBC world title, you know, those were my goals, is to be a world champion in Muay Thai. WBC is a huge organization, and obviously it's supposed to be well respected. And you know, as you get closer to those goals that you meet, you realize they're not really quite what they crack up to be. And you know, I think I have a lot of potential for MMA. I think I have, you know, with the ability to train with Nick and Cesar Gracie, and you know, these high level guys. You know, I've also been sparring partners for Dan Henderson. I've sparred with Mo Lawal. I've sparred with a really long list of of MMA fighters, and you know, I think if I committed myself and trained and got serious about MMA, I could definitely go that route. There's definitely a lot more money in it, and a lot more opportunity. And I'm not against it at all. Although I am definitely, for example, we talked about, you know, these guys that claim to be Muay Thai guys. The fight with Anderson Silva and Rich Franklin was on TV the other night, and they said that Rich Franklin had a great Muay Thai background. And Anderson Silva put him in a regular basic Muay Thai clinch, and he had absolutely no concept of how to get out of it, and that just drives me nuts. This guy's being called a Muay Thai guy. Nothing against Rich Franklin, he was a great champion, but like the watered down stuff that you see in MMA, and it's called Muay Thai, yeah, it drives me nuts looking at it. And to be honest, I think that in the 170-pound division, I think that there's a whole lot of guys that I could beat, and you know, I'm not going to name names, but like guys that have made it all the way to title shots and made a ridiculous amount of money based off being Muay Thai strikers, and I don't see that talent there in a lot of those guys.
Okay, well, we've pretty much touched everything, but I want to talk to you about, you know, what are your heroes in the game? Like, if you look at the fight world, you know, you look at what got you into it, do you have any heroes that you like to speak of, or are there any fights that you're like, man, this fight really changed, you know, my view on fighting, or if I recommend any Muay Thai fight, I recommend this one. Do you have anything along those lines? Who are your heroes and any of your favorite fights?
Heroes, you know, there's a lot of guys that I really look up to and I really admire, and even guys that I'll watch their fights. You know, this last couple of weeks I've been watching, you know, some of these guys' fights just to get, you know, more in the just because I love watching these guys fight, and I really look up to them, and it's the styles that I really like. You know, Mike Tyson is one. You know, Mike Tyson's a little crazy. I'm a little crazy. He gets down to business. He comes to fight. I really like fighters that come to fight. I really don't like super technical, let's play chess in the ring kind of fights. I mean, I respect those guys. Those just aren't my favorite. Guys I really look up to, you know, Bader Hari, Mike Tyson. You know, I guess we'll break it down. Boxing, it was like Bader Hari, or boxing, it was like Mike Tyson, you know, Roy Jones Jr., Muhammad Ali, you know. Fight-wise, I would say Hagler Hearns, you know, was an incredible fight. You know, Castillo Corrales was an incredible fight.
For sure.
I love those kind of fights. You know, I want to be in those kind of fights. I love you know, really getting into wars. And I just, as of late, I've been following the game plans and that my coaches have made out for me, and I just haven't been able to have any lately. You know, these guys are falling down. So, you know, kickboxing, you know, Tyrone Spong, I looked up to for years and years and years. Personally, I liked him better when he was a little lighter. I think you know, since he's transitioned into, you know, a heavyweight, he's a little slower and his style's changed a little bit.
I really liked him when he was
younger and lighter. But yeah, Tyrone Spong, you know, he gets down and I really dig his style. Bader Hari is probably like my all-time favorite fighter right now. Just you know, I think I just watched the Voice versus Bader Hari for the first time the other day.
Yeah,
and that was so awesome to watch because there's just so many things that he says that I just see myself in, and like, there's so much stuff that we have in common. It's almost scary, and you know, it's just funny that, you know, without even knowing all that stuff, I always liked him. And now that I know it, it's like, dude, the guy's like my family or something. So yeah, I really like Bader Hari. I really like Johan Saki. Thought his style was just incredible. I know that Bader just beat him, but I really like his style. And, you know, and as far as like traditional Muay Thai, you know, I'm a very big Samat Payakarun fan. I think he's the best fighter of all time and for Muay Thai. And I just think he's a genius, and having the opportunity to go there to his camp and train with him and develop a relationship with him was just awesome. So those are definitely my heroes, if you wanted to call them that.
Awesome, and it's weird. I was actually filming my documentary, Shen and Chen, when they were filming The Voice Versus. So that's how I got to get footage. So it's interesting that you like it, because that was really, really in-depth. And he really does answer everything 100% honest, like, without hesitation. Do you feel bad about knocking this person out? No. You know? So.
I'm kind of the same way in a lot of those things, you know. It was cool when he was talking about how... he said that he told Overeem that, you know, if you meet me in the final, you won't last 3 minutes with me. And, you know, I've been known for saying almost the exact same thing to my opponents. And I've said the same thing about Simon Marcus, that I'm going to knock him out in the first round.
Okay.
And, and my chick is always like, you know, why do you put that pressure on yourself? And I tell her all the time, like, I like that pressure. And then I'm watching the documentary, and they're like, doesn't that put a lot of pressure on you? And he's like, I like that pressure. And I'm like, it's so weird. Very, very, we have a lot of things in common. It's a cool dude.
Cool. Well, now is my time to kind of turn this over to you. First and foremost, is there anyone from your gym, any friends of yours in the fight sport that you want to promote at this time and say, hey, look out for this person? This person is a really good fighter. Also, is there anyone that you want to thank for who you've become, whether it be your trainer, whether it be a sponsor, whatever? I really want to leave the end of the show to you to sell and promote, you know, people who fight, fighters in the industry, our sponsors that help you get going. This time is your time.
All right. Yeah, I'd like to thank, you know, my team, the Yard Muay Thai, you know, my coach, Mark Camoro, my Roger from Rehab to Fitness, my physical therapist, who's done, just an amazing guy, has done so much for me. Chris Pooley, my manager, Mike Sanchez from Psych Ward Fitness, my strength and conditioning coach, has done a lot for me. OC Fight Doctor, you know, they did all of my rehab on my knee and really brought me back from the dead spot, so to speak, for. You know, and sponsored me and took care of me, and has been phenomenal. And, you know, all of my other sponsors and my team, really, I think success comes from, is all about timing and people come into your life at the right time. And, you know, I think my team has really come together, and I know this is my time and I owe it to them.
Awesome, awesome. So, there you have it, folks. Joe Schilling, tell the people about the fight this weekend. Where's it going to be at? Just go ahead and, you know, sell that event for yourself.
Fighting Simon Marcus on this Saturday night, February 25th, at Lion Fight Promotions at the Hard Rock in Las Vegas. If you're not in Las Vegas this weekend, you can catch it at GFL.TV. It's going to be a good fight. Simon Marcus has said a lot of stupid shit about me, and I've said some very true stuff about him. And I plan on knocking the dog shit out of him on Saturday night.
All right, cool. Thanks again for your time, Joe.
Yeah, man.